Hello, this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin, and my guest today is Elizabeth Green, and she's written an unconventional, entertaining and very moving memoir, Not in the Script, about growing up feeling she'd been written out of the family story, dominated by her brother, the entrepreneur Philip Green of Arcadia, which this week became the largest British corporation to go into administration because of the global pandemic. And of course, there are many other scandals attached to his name. Elizabeth reflects on her life and the upbringing that shaped both her and her brother in very different ways. Let's start with your early life and your parents, because your father died when you were very young and your mother was obviously a huge influence. But tell us about the very beginnings. You're the older sibling.
I am.
And so your mother, it appears in the book, was really very cold.
I found this new word for her lately, formidable. I think that sums her up really well.
So were you and your brother close as children?
I did this fabulous book for my nephew's bar mitzvah. We assembled a lot of old photos and scanned them and put them in on yellow pages. It looks as if they're real photos. And I did do a page in the book where him and I were cuddling and hugging. I must have been about, we were 3 years apart, so I must have been about six and he was two or three. So yes, in the beginning, but then he went to boarding school when he was eight, and I guess after that he did his thing and I did my thing.
But there was never really a sort of, was there a defining moment? Do you remember a sort of falling
out? No, there wasn't. That was the funny thing. And my friends who know me have asked me for years, what happened? What did you do? You know, obviously I'm the culprit here. What did you do? And I've racked and racked my brains for years. Couldn't think of anything. I don't know. No, nothing springs to mind. I mean, I remember in one of our little altercations, I don't know if you read it. There's a piece about he got his wedding blessed in the book. And I asked if I could come to the wedding blessing. And he said no. And I asked for about 3 weeks. And they still said no. And then eventually I phoned him up and I said, why can't I come? And he said, oh, because I don't like you. Or he says things like, when you behave yourself, you're invited. So it kind of didn't make sense. So it just was what it was. It's like, I did a lot of work on myself to come to peace with myself. I felt I needed to. I had to.
The death of your father.
My mother handled it kind of interestingly. And the school handled it interestingly. It wasn't even mentioned in the school reports. The one thing my mother kept from school was the school reports. It wasn't even mentioned in the school reports. It was just like, oh, she's been behaved a bit better this term. Let's hope it continues. The month my father died. It was so English. I can't describe it any other way. As I say in the book, I don't think it resonated for a number of years that he died. I kept thinking I was going to walk around the corner and see him. I wasn't that close to him. He was ill. He had migraines. He took morphine. He self-medicated with morphine. I mean, you know, central casting sent me a dysfunctional family. We all are. But, you know, when I looked back on it, when I started to write about it, I was like, because you take all that stuff for normal. You don't think it's weird.
Sex has a very big part in this book, and clearly one of the ways you were trying to cope with not feeling loved at home was by getting physical attention from many people.
Yeah, and the point was, there was a point where I knew it wasn't what I was looking for, and then I had to rationalize in my head and go, oh, well, but it's nice anyway. I'll just keep going down the tunnel where there's no cheese.
Yeah. You got married, of course, to David. Now tell us about his parents, because that is an extraordinary setup.
So his mother lived with her husband and another guy, and the other guy had been her boyfriend, and he'd gone away to war, and by the time he came back she'd married the second one. But they all ended up living together, and David's father was the other one, not the
husband,
not her husband. But it was all kept under the mat till I came along and got him to spill the beans one day. And I'm like, what do you mean you haven't spoken to them about it? What do you mean it's not out in the open? What do you mean you don't call him dad and granddad? You know, because women are more like, you know, men are like, oh, we're going to hold on to it. Oh, let's hide it. Oh, God, don't have a feeling, whatever you do. And women want to talk about it.
You left your husband eventually and you went off to India. You changed your name there to Veena. You wore orange. Tell me a little about that.
I have a friend who I met in India who's in the book, and he's friends with people who live near where I used to live in London. And one day, unbeknownst to me, we all went out for a dinner. I hadn't seen them for years, and they invited this guy. And I've been in touch with him ever since. He lives in Germany. He used to live in North London, like me. And because I wanted to ask him if it was okay what I'd written about him in the book. And I started to realize it was quite sort of derring do back in its day. But it didn't seem like that. It's like, well, I'm unhappy in London and my family are a bit dysfunctional and nobody seems that interested in me. And I don't really have some wonderful career. Well, I did. I wanted to be a writer, but I'd been dissuaded that that wasn't for me. And so I found this place and they were doing meditation and stuff and they were wearing orange. And one of the leaders said, oh, would you like to take my daughter to India? Because her father's there and you can meet the guru, by the way. And I went, sure, why not? I was always a bit like, okay, what? And the funny thing is, I don't even think I'm that daring. That's the weird thing. But it's like, why not? What's next? Bring it on.
All of this time, of course, your brother in parallel is building his career, building up his portfolio of businesses. Were you involved with that much?
Pretty much no. I'm trying to think what it was like at the beginning. Oh, I worked for him one time. He had this shop in Conduit Street where he bought all these, what they call cabbage, all these garments that weren't of the, you know, the most fashionable, but the job lot that he bought, and he had them all ironed. And I worked in the shop and I was like a fish out of water. I didn't belong there. I'm not, yes, I like nice clothes and jewelry and perfume. And yes, I've put perfume on for an interview, silly me, but I'm not, all that extravagance and hype is kind of not for me. Yeah, I like nice things, but it's not the end of the world. Yeah, I went to one of his, I went to the toga party in Cyprus.
So that's the 50th birthday party, which we've all read about. Hugely, hugely extravagant. Tell us about that, because it does sound extraordinary. But I understand you spoke to him once in 4 days.
Well, that to me wasn't unusual. He was with all his friends, all the movers and shakers. It's exactly like I wrote it. I mean, I knew everybody, or I could say, oh, hey, I'm Philip's sister, how are you? And of course, people spoke to me. I knew some of the people. I didn't know some of the other people. It was pretty spectacular, but I didn't love it because I was with my soon-to-be ex and we weren't, you know. And of course, we were also sat right near the back. It wasn't like we had good seats with the family or the important people, never. Michael Aspel did This Is Your Life, and he came down with a big blue book. That's exactly where the title of the book comes from.
Tell us what happened.
We were all on the terrace. It was on the second morning and it was beautiful out there and we had gorgeous food. There were different food stations or whatever. And suddenly they were dan, 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 dan. And Michael Aspel comes down carrying a big book and he says, Sir Philip Green, this is your life. And I got excited. I used to have to remember not to get excited because often this kind of wouldn't really involve me. Do you know what I mean when I say that? But I rushed over to the ballroom and I rushed into the ballroom and there were two rows of seats at the front with my mother in the front corner seat and there was a big screen with Philip's picture on it. She's sitting at the front and they've got rows and rows of seats for all the other people and I rush in and I go, oh, where am I sitting? And she goes, oh, you're not in the script. And it was really a moment. It was a moment. It was like, wow, okay. I didn't even have a seat in the two front rows with the nearest and dearest. And I had to hustle to get a seat for me and my husband, soon-to-be ex-husband. But the interesting thing was, if I ever made a fuss about anything, then I was the bad person because I'd made a fuss.
Lots of other parties that you mentioned. So, for instance, the party for your mother, which was meant to be her 90th, but it turned out was, in fact, her 89th birthday.
Correct. That's why I called it the 89th / 90th birthday party. And my proof editor in London wanted to call it the 90th. And I'm like, no. Basically, they'd organised Paul Anker as a cabaret. And I'm assuming that they didn't want to change that. So they carried on. So she had the birthday going into her 90th year.
I wanted to quote a little bit because Paul Anker sang her, I Did It My Way. But he changed the words. You bet, with flats to let, your tenants get a fine safe haven. It's true, Philip watched you, and now he too is a business maven.
That was brilliant.
Hilarious. You talked about Brandon, his son's bar mitzvah earlier, and at that you say that Chloe, Brandon's sister and Philip's daughter, told your daughter that her dad paid for her.
Oh, that wasn't at the bar mitzvah. That was after I wasn't invited to marriage blessing in the house, my mother didn't speak to me for 3 weeks for asking if I could be invited. So after that, we were invited to a birthday party at the house. And I always wanted to be included, but I didn't feel comfortable when I was there. It was like a double-edged sword. And I sort of kind of didn't want to go, but my husband was annoyed with me. Like, we made such a fuss about that, you can't not go to this, which was true. So we went along, and I think it was at one point we were helping ourselves to food or something, and she turned around and said, oh, my dad pays for you.
And did he, and does he still?
Difficult area. Yes, he did. I have to say, he looked after us and he was generous. We didn't like get overkill, but he made sure we were okay and he helped us along the way. And yes, I've had a nice life and I've had things that I need, and I'll miss going to Topshop and shopping. They were all my friends. I feel bad for them. Mm. I've tried to phone the head of personal shopping, but it's only a work phone. But yes, they were lovely to me and they didn't treat me, well, maybe they did behind the scenes, but I was just a shopper to them. And we laughed and we joked and we talked about stuff, and they didn't ask intrusive questions and I didn't answer intrusive questions. So yes, he looked after me. I paid something for the clothes, they weren't free, but yeah, I was looked after. That's why I feel funny, because you know, people, if you don't have money, you think money's the place to attain. Money's the thing you need to have. Everything will be fine. It's not. Money became a horrible bargaining chip. It became we'll give you money and we'll look after you. And then I kept quiet for 25 years.
What's changed then? Why do you feel you can speak out about it now?
I don't know. It was interesting. The going to New York, I'd always wanted to live in New York. And I didn't realize till I got here, it was to kind of get away from the family. And my kids actually like me more since I've been in New York. Make what you will of that. Well, they're big now. They don't need me, seemingly. I'd always, always, always wanted to be a writer. I've been to classes over all the years. I did a course at Arvon, if you must know Arvon. And I'm still in touch with my tutor from there, who's a guy called Courtier Newland. And I've actually just sent him a book and we stayed in touch. I like networking. I love people. And I try and stay in touch with everybody that I ever meet. You know, I have to be a little discerning some days. But it was nice being here. Nobody knew who I was. Nobody cared who I was. Then I discovered I've got an English accent, which makes me stand out a little bit. It was just refreshing. And it's a different climate here. Like, people are more optimistic here. People are more upbeat. And I've got friends of all ages. Most of my friends are younger than me. Oh my God, if I'd been in England in the pandemic, I'd be miserable.
I can see why there is so much hurt in this book. There was one bit where you describe a Christmas, and you've gone to the trouble of getting Philip a book that's been inscribed by the author. Tell us what happened.
Well, they invented this, we would have Christmas get-togethers, and it was a little uncomfortable. This was the second one. And I'd been to something at school, and I'd got this book by David Baddiel, nice Jewish author, because I think my brother quite likes his Jewish heritage, and well, I do as well. And it was signed to Philip, blah, blah, blah. And we were at the Dorchester in Chinatown downstairs, and we were all sitting around the big table, and some of the Filipino girls were sitting at the other table, and everyone was giving out presents, and I...
To be clear, the Filipino girls were staff.
Staff, yeah. I didn't want to say maids, they're staff, yeah. Because they became like family.
Yeah.
So the Filipino staff were sitting in the corner, and there was a frenzy of presents going on, and I'd very carefully found out what I could buy for the green. You know, what do you buy the people who've got everything? Very difficult. Anyway, and I knew we'd get one present each, and we opened our present, and the kids all got iPods, which was great, and I got this teeny-weeny Gucci bag. I'd rather have had an iPod, but anyway, that's not the point. And I bought him this book, and there was a card, and the book and the card got separated. And one thing I know about Philip, he wants to be thanked, and he should be thanked for what he does. And I don't know how I feel about what's going on right now, but he should be thanked. And he did some great things, and he employed a lot of people back in the day, and he contributed a lot to the economy. What's gone on now is what's gone on, and I'm not involved in that. Anyway, he just started yelling. He opened this book. I don't think he has time to read or inclination. Maybe he does now. And he just opened this book and started yelling. And Jacob, my youngest son, was sitting with Brandon. And apparently, I found out later, Brandon said to him, keep your head down. We're in the eye of the storm. And my big son tried to stand up and say something. And my mother was telling him, sit down, sit down. They were sitting together around the table. And Philip was about to turn on him. So he sat down. And then later, Chloe said to me, I'm sorry about my dad. One of my favorite lines is in there, because then they left to go and catch the private plane to go to Sandy Bay in Barbados. And I said something about they left for Sandy Lane, where Santa Claus is going to arrive on the beach on his jet ski, where the presents and the weather will be exquisite and something else. I can't remember. That's one of my favorite lines. Oh, expensive and exquisite. Yeah.
And you talked about how when he was yelling, he was saying, why didn't you get me something like a nice tie from M&S?
I think in the moment you just say anything comes out your mouth. I mean, I'm sure if I'd got him a tie from M&S, he'd have found something wrong with that. I mean, I think I was just wrong most of the time.
How have you coped? Because you're very, very brutally honest in the book, not only about sex, but also about your relationship with food.
Food and sex go hand in hand quite often. And that was my compensating. My father was a compulsive overeater. Now, obviously, you don't inherit that, and I didn't see that much of it, but, you know, I could have done drugs, I could have done alcohol, I chose food. Food was my, sugar was my cocaine, as I said. Mm. Wow, it's making me upset talking about this.
Well, it's so funny now that you've opened this wonderful restaurant in New York, so food
is
now your job.
I know, what a joke. I own a restaurant in New York, what a joke, yeah. Which started off as a burger bar, which so wasn't me. Listen, I've always been into healthy, 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 but I ate a lot of sugar. The pull is food, but you know, use what you've got. Yeah, I didn't know where the West Village was when I came here. I bought the restaurant off an internet site. I didn't know anything. I did a lot of work on myself. I started in India. I mean, I know I joke and fell in love and had a love affair, all that stuff, but it kind of, I was working on myself. It was really real what Bhagwan was saying about, what has he said? A life without love is a life not worth living. It's really true. I mean, and I'm still looking. Stupid me. Yeah, I'm looking. Tell your listeners I'm looking. There's a quote. I've done a funny thing, and I got my ex-husband to make the poster. In Sex and the City, when Carrie Bradshaw, she's in Paris, and she chucks her French lover and Big comes to get her, for any of your readers who actually watch that. Mm. And she breaks up with him and she says to him, I want love, real love. I want ridiculous, inconvenient, consuming, can't live without each other, love. That's what I want.
Yeah.
And I've done a poster which says, planted owner Elizabeth Green says, blah, 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 with the quote and her underneath. And I'm going to put it in the window and see what happens.
Well, nothing like advertising. Absolutely.
Totally. And if I get some press attention, so be it. For the restaurant and the book and me, it's like, you know, don't ever give up on what you want to do. I'm a survivor. And I worked very hard on myself. I tried regular therapists. They were idiots, most of them. I could run rings around them. It was terrible. And then I did something called the Landmark Forum, which a lot of people say is a cult and it's brainwashing. It wasn't. It's fine. That helped me to be so frank and open and say what I got to say.
Talking about love and perhaps how your poster might generate some publicity. Of course, your brother is in the eye of the storm right now, that the world's attention mm-hmm. is on him. First of all, there was the BHS pension scandal. Now, of course, the collapse of Arcadia. Perhaps as many as 13,000 jobs will go. You are going to be asked about this a lot. Yep. How do you feel?
It bothers me. When I read about it, it bothers me. And it bothers me because I'm sure it's upsetting for him, but he would never show that. And businessmen like that, they like to win. They want to get it right. They want to do it right. They don't go into it to fail. I don't think. That's my take on it. So maybe there's a silver lining. I believe things happen for a reason. And they say the writing was on the wall for Topshop and Co. before the pandemic, and the pandemic just, for everybody, heightened what's going on underneath. And this is the underbelly, and I don't know whether anything can come out of it.
Is there anything you would like to say to Philip about any of that?
No. I wrote a little thing to Tina saying I was very sorry. Just really take care of yourself and look after your health. And then look after everybody else's health and well-being. You know, I hate to be a bit sort of hippy-dippy, but I know nothing about his business or what he does.
But you have finally produced your book, which is wonderful.
That's right. What was her name? There was a woman, I couldn't remember her name. She wrote The Chamomile Lawn, and she was about my age when she produced her first book.
Mary Wesley, by Mary Wesley.
Thank you. Perfect. I can see the cover now. Yeah, she wrote her first book when she was my age. So, and the other thing, I think the piece missing for me was two things. I was always looking outside for verification of who I was. It ain't outside, it's inside. If you don't love yourself, you can't attract love. You attract what you put out there. And I think the one thing that I didn't get any self-esteem or self-confidence from my family at all. And when you're operating without that, you always think you're the worst person in the room, and you always think you're not good enough, and you always think you're not special enough and not anything enough.
But yet the attitude towards Philip seems to be entirely different. I mean, you write about going to visit your mother and being in what you call the Philip Green shrine.
The thing was, do you know what I came out to say later in life? I actually came out to say, you know, he missed out. He didn't get to have a sister. That's the best way I can come to terms with it.
That's a fabulous attitude.
Because here's the thing. You watch the adverts for 30 seconds. You see the perfect family with the picket fence. Well, that's what that's what I wanted. I can't speak for all of you. But I had this idealized picture. I wanted to have a mother and a father and a family and somebody who listened to me and cared about me. And I didn't get any of the above. And yeah, I felt sorry for myself, and I've cried and I've eaten sugar and done all that stuff. But I'm the only one who can fix it. I'm the only one who can handle it. I'm the only one who's present. And it was interesting because in 2017, I had these horrible business partners, horrible, who really stiffed me and messed me up. And they said, oh, we don't need you at the restaurant. You should go to the beach or join a book club. That's when I started writing the book and put things together and got things going.
Elizabeth, congratulations. I really think that you have obviously been on this journey that you've documented in this book. And it's so interesting. And I commend you.
Thank you. I mean, the way you've asked me about it has made me able to talk about it in a really comfortable, nice way. So thank you for that.
Elizabeth Green's book, Not in the Script, is available on Amazon. You've been listening to Monocle Reads. Thanks to the production team of Steph Chungu and Nora Hull. I'm Georgina Godwin. Do check out our archive. Lots and lots of interesting interviews with authors on Meet the Writers on Monocle 24. Thank you for listening.